big story in the world of sports today is the passing of a legend in the American sports scene. Don Shula, the longtime coach of both the Baltimore Colts and the Miami Dolphins, has passed away at the age of 90. And we could talk about him, but we thought it best to talk with someone who knew him very well, who worked with him. And so we're joined on the phone this afternoon by our friend Upton Bell. And Upton, condolences on the loss of your friend and mentor.
Well, it's interesting because, Rich, I've known gangsters, I've known thieves, I've known owners, I've known coaches, I've known every personality practically since the 40s, and there's no other guy like this guy. And I'm not talking today to you about his record, about his achievements. I'm talking to you about a guy that lived his public life right through till he was 90. And unlike, let's say, a Belichick or people like that, he was complex, but not so complex that he couldn't be human.
Mm.
And the human side that I saw of him, that probably people in New England remember him as the jet-jawed, taciturn, tough guy that usually came in here and won every time he was here. But if I go all the way back to what he was when he first came to the Colts, in 1963, and I had been there already for 2 years, but, you know, I was in my early 20s, and being introduced to a person like this, he was tough, he would yell, he would do all these other things, but the one thing about him that I've always tried to judge people by in life is if you had an idea, if you came to him straightforward and said, this is what I want to do, he wasn't one of those people that either grabbed your idea and ran with it or said, you know, don't bother me. If you got his attention, he would let you do whatever you wanted to do. And that's very, very hard in the world of coaching and in the, you know, kind of button-down, tight-lipped NFL. He was an extraordinary human being. And I've met pretty much all of the good and a lot of the bad. But there was something about him from the very first day I met him that really stood out.
And he took a chance on you at a fairly young age.
Well, that's the thing. You know, you remember your mistakes and your achievements from a very young age, especially as you begin to look back on it. And here I was in his second year, the 25-year-old, 26-year-old, who had basically, and in those days, to be head scout, to be any scout whatsoever, you had to be 50 and signing your will. I mean, you just didn't get the opportunity. And a real irony that tied me together to him for a lifetime, and also to Mike Curtis, who died just a few months ago, is that it came the 1964-65 draft. We are fighting the AFL, people were signing people, people were kidnapping players. I mean, I tell you, it was the wild, wild west. And basically, we go in San Francisco, we were on the road, and we had to hold the draft on the road, and all the books are flown out, we're getting ready for it, and my boss, the director of player personnel, Keith Molesworth, just before we were to choose, had a heart attack. And they actually carried him out of the room. I'm going right to myself, all right, Upton, this is it. And Shula turns to me and says, all right, kid, we'll see how good you are. And the thing, again, that through his whole life that I always appreciated, he said, all right, who do you like? And they had the coaching books. They could look at everything, the scouting books. And I said, probably you haven't heard a lot about him. Mike Curtis out of Duke. I said, he's listed as a running back. I said, but I think he could be a great linebacker someday. And he looked at me and he said, you better be right. But instead of saying, you know what, we're going to forget, get out of the way, Bell. We're going to take who we want. He went along with it. And he went along with my second choice, which was Ralph Neely, one of the great all-pros for the Cowboys. We couldn't sign because of the war between the leagues. Then there was Al Atkinson, who played for the world champion New York Jets, And then Marty Schottenheimer, who was a great player, went on to be a coach. Because he had confidence, at least appeared in me, that got me through that night. A year later, the director of player personnel dropped dead on a Sunday. I came back. I walked into Shula and I said, I know a lot of people are going to say, you can't make a 26-year-old your director of player personnel. And I said, I also know that there are a lot of people who say, you know, you should hire your former guy at Detroit, Bob Nussbaumer. I said, but I want that job, and I will show you I can do the job. Didn't say a word, nothing. Never said, you know, well, you're in the running or anything like that. And 3 months later, he came in one day and he said, the job's yours, now get the hell going.
That was it. We're talking with Upton Bell about the late Don Shula, who passed away at the age of 90. So what was his greatest strength, Upton? Was it strategy, the X's and O's, or was it his ability to work with and motivate people?
I think the public look at him is completely different. I think his greatest ability was to judge people first, before football players or coaches or anybody. He very rarely made a mistake in picking people. Remember, he picked Chuck Knoll. And I said, I know he was a player with you with Cleveland. And he said, this guy's going to be great someday. He picked Bill Einsparker, probably the defensive genius of his time. He picked the right players. But the other thing is that I want to give an example to your audience of what he was like about, and I was watching today a lot of the tributes. And one thing that Shula always said is, Uppy, we're going to win. But we're going to win within the rules. He said, we're going to do it the right way. And I used to say to him, Jesus, please, spare me with all that crap. And so an example of it is the second year I decided, which then wasn't necessarily against the league rules, but I decided just before the draft, a week before, I said, I've got 100 players. I said, I want to bring in, I said, this gives you an opportunity to take a look at them. We'll work them up for 2 days, put them up at the hotel, the whole routine. And initially went along with it. And then the league office called 2 days later, and they said, we have reports of players are coming in to work out, and that right now is against the league rules, which I was, by the way, not aware of. So after they left, he came into the room, sat down with him, he said, I want to tell you one thing. He said, and this will go for as long as we're together or I'm here. We don't break league rules. We're going to do it the right way. We will always do it the right way. This is why everybody, you know, Dallas is cheating. I said, well, everybody else is cheating. He said, I don't give a damn what everybody else is doing. We're going to do it the right way. And to the very end, that's what he felt. And it's ironic that I picked he and Belichick as the two greatest coaches behind Paul Brown. And it's ironic that, you know, the Belichick cheating scandal and all the other stuff around it, and he did make a comment calling him Belichick. It's ironic because they were together, because I was there a couple of years before that. And it's a shame that it kind of ended up that way. But you know what? People think that Shula was just shooting his mouth off. He respected Belichick, but he didn't respect anybody that even one iota cheated or thought he cheated in the league. That's the type of person he was.
We talked with you about this, and we've talked with author Jack Gilden about it as well. It was a challenging relationship with John Unitas when they were together.
There was, and I was right in the middle of it. Somebody called me about it the other day. And I could understand both their sides. Shula was a young coach coming in with his own ideas, pardon me, and changing from a different era where Eubank before him, the Hall of Fame coach, let John pretty much do what he wanted. Shula wanted a more structured thing. Unitas, on the other hand, was the greatest quarterback of his time in his prime, and he was saying, yo, I don't have to listen to this 33-year-old nut. You know, he used to be here as a player. And you could see that clash coming. And unfortunately, it went all the way through to the point of where John got hurt in 1968. Earl Morrow came in, and it just made it worse and worse and worse. And that's, by the way I saw, in some ways, the Tom Brady-Belichick thing. That clash of two gigantic egos, two wills, two really great people. I'm not surprised at all with what happened here because I had the experience of seeing it there. In the end, when John died, Shula came up. He admitted later on, I think in Jack's book too, that you know he may have been just a little bit too headstrong in the beginning as a young coach. But he learned from it. And that's the big lesson too. You've got to learn from the whole situation. He was always learning, always ahead of the game. And that's what he took to Miami when he left. That basically he went in there and here's where I give him the slight edge over Bill here, and to a degree Paul Brown, is that basically Shula won with the running game. He won with the quarterback. He won with Greasy. He won with Marino. He won with an all-running attack and an undefeated season with Azaga, Kick, and Warfield and Greasy. He won with a no-name defense. He had to change all the time. He actually, I was telling a writer from the New York Times today, the one that comments on him, I said, remember this. He took a quarterback that nobody remembers by the name of David Woodley to the Super Bowl, and if it wasn't for a John Riggins touchdown run at the end of the game, he would have stolen the Super Bowl with a quarterback that nobody ever heard of. That is real talent.
How important was that unbeaten season with the Dolphins to him in the scope of his career?
Well, I think it's very, very important. In fact, it's funny, when they lost the year before, the first time that they went to the Super Bowl, lost to Dallas, and after the game, I met Shula. I was my first year as a Patriot, and I could tell how upset he was. And he said, we had lost the 68 game that we should have won to the Jets. And he said, maybe it's just never in the cards for me. And I said, you know what, that's not true. And basically, Zonka told a story today that after they lose to Dallas, Shula throws all the media out after the game, closes the door and tells every one of the players there that we are coming back next year and we are going to be so dedicated to every game, every situation. Remember this loss because next year it's not going to be that way. Now, I don't know how many coaches would go in and say something like that after really being dominated by Dallas. But, of course, the next year was the perfect record. And I don't think it will ever be broken. And I think that the people who say today, yes, the players are bigger, quicker, faster, stronger, but it was harder to win then. There were no patsies. And again, it was a 14-game schedule. And the rules hadn't been changed yet. You had bump and run. You go down the middle and you're going to be beheaded. That's why I consider it maybe one of the greatest feats ever in NFL history.
Well, it's great to get your perspective on one of the greatest individuals in the history of professional sports in this country, Don Shula Upton. Always good to talk with you, my friend. Be well, stay safe, and we'll talk with you again on a happier day.
Thank you. Great to be on with you.
Thanks, Upton. Upton Bell with us on Downtown.